live it in living color. It's talk radio.
Yeah.
Abe Proctor. Say hello to all the folks out there.
Hello, folks out there.
And I'm Joe Uris, and we got so much news. Good news?
News. Yeah, bad news.
Bad news. Bad stuff. News. We got stuff. We got so much stuff you all want to listen to us and pontificate along with us.
Yep.
Yeah. 231-8187 is the number to call. KBOO, that's the station you're on.
First of all,
yes.
Bad news from Germany.
Bad news from Germany?
Yeah.
What?
We got our asses handed to us by the
Czechs. Who's the we? Wait, who's the we in that sentence?
The United States men's national football team.
You mean like soccer?
Yeah. Well, we got.
Who cares?
We got beat up and down the field for 90 minutes.
Nobody.
Don't say nobody cares, because somebody cares.
You care.
Yeah, me and.
Because you play indoor sissy soccer.
Yeah, that's right.
Sissy soccer. I know about that.
Yeah, it was an old-fashioned thumping is what it was.
Well, the Americans, you know, Americans don't even pay any attention to soccer. They think it's kind of like putting library paste on the...
Not the case, man. There's been several generations now of growing up playing a game.
That's true. All the elite kids.
No, not necessarily all the elite kids.
In America?
No. There's a number of the starters on this national team who came from definitely less than elite background.
So you mean like I'm just assuming some kind of classist thing?
Yes, you are.
It's not really true?
No.
I'm unfair?
Yeah.
Could
ignorant.
That be? Could I? Ignorant?
Unfair and ignorant.
Unfair and ignorant. Sounds like America. Yeah. Woo!
Yeah.
All right.
But anyway, regardless of their backgrounds, they got kicked around.
They weren't very aggressive. I saw a little of it.
No, they weren't.
They were kind of wimpy.
Not creative.
Not creative at all.
Glaring defensive lapses, and it was
ugly. It was bad. Three to nothing.
3-0.
That's kind of bad in soccer, isn't it?
Yeah, it's real bad in soccer.
Why am I so pleased? I do you have like a nationalist feeling about this? You think the American team should be, you know, good?
Yeah, I want them to be good.
Why?
See, because I can be unabashedly nationalist about it. You know, there's no lies being lost.
Do you get excited with the Olympics like that too?
Yeah, I do, but not as much as the World Cup.
You know, I'm with the Imagine song. You know, I no nations, no God. You know, no none of that stuff.
Even if we got rid of nations and God, I think we'd still be playing soccer.
That's
just that popular.
I pretend to hate soccer. I actually like soccer. Although my line on it is still my favorite line. It's almost as exciting as watching paint dry.
It's far, far more exciting.
It is far more exciting.
That's
and people
right.
take it on the head. Now, what I want to know is, doesn't that eventually cause brain damage?
There's been some evidence to suggest that. Yeah, a lot of youth players now wear these little header guards.
Header guards.
Yeah, they got a pad on the forehead and on the temples. Those are the places where you most often head the ball.
It's like what they wanted to do to boxing.
Yeah, well, what they do that in the Olympics.
Yeah.
But, so a lot of kids wear these header guards. The idea is it's harder on the developing heads than it is on fully formed heads.
Fully formed heads.
Yeah.
Sounds like something we can't talk about at this hour. All right. Boy, have we got some stuff. First of all, I'm going to revisit the depleted uranium a little bit. But, you know, I got several requests, and I want to, if you will bear with me, there are a couple, three things we're going to do. I wanted to talk a little bit about the Marshall Plan. Apparently a lot of people called up not knowing what the hell that was, and I mentioned it last time, you know, Marshall Plan to rebuild Europe.
Oh, I thought that was Wyatt Earp's plan to clear out
Marshall Earp! Marshall Earp! There's trouble! No, that wasn't it, but it's close. And I wanted to talk about that, and I also wanted to talk a little bit, very little bit, about the history, recent history of Afghanistan, because apparently people just don't know this stuff. You know, stuff just disappears off the consciousness.
Yeah, both of those things figure very prominently into what's going on today. So
very, very. So I thought I would do that, but you have more important issues, perhaps.
We get it. Just, you know, stuff's always happening.
What's the good of it? One bad thing after another.
Karl Rove is not going to be indicted, apparently.
Oh, really?
Yeah, apparently Prosecutor Fitzgerald sent a letter to Rove and his attorney saying that they're not going to seek charges against him.
Oh, good. I was worried about that.
Yeah, I was worried, too.
Karl and I are, you know, we used to hang out at the Multnomah Athletic Club.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
And he's such an upstanding citizen. I hate to see his reputation besmirched by anything like that.
Besmirched.
Besmirched, yeah.
Yeah.
There's also a new development in the ongoing web of Republican graft in the House.
Ah.
There's a guy named Jerry Lewis, not the film star, beloved by the French.
No, the one who works for the telethon there.
No. This is a Republican congressman from California.
Boy, with a name like that, how can he go wrong?
I'm about to tell you. It just hasn't happened. I had a guy working for him, started in 1994 by the name of Jeffrey Shockey, now 39.
Okay.
Very wealthy guy for 39, apparently. In 99, he left Lewis to work for a lobbying firm called Copeland Lowry.
Okay.
And he went to work for these guys lobbying, believe it or not, for people who wanted access to Lewis.
Jerry Lewis.
Jerry Lewis, the congressman for whom
not
he had just recently
right.
left. So he just left Lewis's office. He went to work in the private sector as a lobbyist, getting people access to Lewis.
This the is old the, revolving door.
The old revolving door,
okay.
Yeah. Okay, so this was between about 1999 and about 2004. Lewis all this time was a member of the Appropriations Committee and chair of the Appropriations Defense Subcommittee. But in January of last year, Lewis ascended to the full chairmanship.
Wait, can I guess that Lewis is a Republican?
He is. I already said that. Pay attention. Keep trying to
keep up. Sorry.
Okay. Lewis ascended to the chairmanship of the full Appropriations Committee. Now, this is the this is the committee that controls the purse strings. This is the most powerful committee in the House.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So Lewis is now the head of it. So Shockey quits his job with the lobbying firm, and he becomes he goes to work directly for the committee's staff, which is now headed by Lewis. this is really interesting. He's still receiving money from the lobbying firm based on how much of a return he's able to give a these firms represented by lobbyists on their investment by bringing issues directly before the Appropriations Committee.
Isn't that like, you know, conflict of interest and stuff?
Yeah, it is. It is.
Yeah.
He's still being paid by the lobbying firm, which is in the earmark business, based on how many earmarks he's able to deliver from the Appropriations Committee.
Why do you hate America so much?
That's a great gig if you can get it. You
know I want that gig. I really want that gig. I should be a lobbyist. I'm very persuasive. I have absolutely no ethics. You know,
yeah,
I should do this.
Pays better than KBOO.
Oh, duh.
Yeah. All right, so who took over this guy Shockey's client list when he returned to, quote, government service? His wife.
His wife.
Yeah.
Oh,
so,
well.
it's all in the big grafty family.
I think that's
sweet. The right wing here.
And, that's family values, man.
Yeah, it is. It is.
It's a Christian thing.
Yeah. So, I'm supposed to wonder what sort of severance package pays out $2 million when the severee quits rather than being downsized or canned and also keeps paying based on how much money he's able to deliver to his former employees.
It's better than a golden parachute. It's a golden rocket.
It's a golden rocket.
Hey, I love this stuff. You know, what I love about this administration is they have brought graft to a new high.
They really have.
They've really gone further.
Really,
Democrats used to be good at it. Republicans were reasonably good at it. Now, though, these new age Republicans, man.
Yeah, credit where credit's due.
Oh, gosh. You talk about the cross of gold.
Oh, yeah. I'm impressed.
Whoa. Now, what else we got? That you want
to? We got the stolen election 2004.
Oh, Rolling Stone?
Yeah, Rolling Stone. This article's been out for a couple of weeks, but we haven't had time to address it.
No,
so
really.
Why don't you go ahead?
Well, I'm gonna do a little pontification and discussion here. First of all, several people, this surprised me, the Marshall Plan, of course, nobody knows history because it's, boring.
Yeah, it's in the past.
It's happened.
Yeah.
Even as I speak, it's happened.
Right, they hate us for our freedom.
That's it. Yeah. So what I wanted to just very briefly, the Marshall Plan was a brilliant way of giving Europe recovery after World War II, named after George G. Marshall, who was George Marshall, who was a general, who was actually Eisenhower's mentor. Eisenhower later became president of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of ran the invasion of Europe, D-Day thing.
The Supreme Allied Commander.
Yeah, guy.
Yes.
But Marshall was really the brains of all of that, turns out. Anyway, Marshall then put together a brilliant plan, which essentially was done under the administration of, under the administration of both Democrats and Republicans, which loaned vast sums of money and gave huge amounts of money to any of the nations involved in World War II in the European theater. And the Soviets were, of course, offered an opportunity to be involved, but they would have to share economic data so naturally, and we knew that. They turned it down. Stalin didn't want to mess with us in that respect. But the Marshall Plan essentially rebuilt Europe. It made it possible for the so-called German miracle, which was very important to creating that solid border between the Eastern Bloc and the Western Bloc, known as the Free Nations. It rebuilt France. It helped England. It did Italy, everybody got an enormous benefit out of this plan of investment of American capital.
Yeah. And American corporations got rich. That has to be said, too.
Yeah, it has to be said. Yeah. A lot of corporations, American and European, got very, very wealthy off the Marshall Plan. But it worked, and it also provided jobs. It was a successful example of intelligent capitalism.
Well, and it was an unprecedented example of mercy on one's defeated enemies.
Well, that too.
Yeah, there weren't any punishing reparations levied against the Germans.
Yeah, we had learned from the disasters of World War I, apparently. Yeah. So anyway, that's the Marshall Plan. The Marshall Plan is very important because it set the model for how you deal with these situations. Now, the reason why it's relevant today is, of course, we aren't doing that. We aren't going to do that.
No.
Once we defeat the war, once we win the war on terrorism, which is a weird abstraction that makes no sense whatsoever, but once we win the war on terrorism, we will, what?
As the Rockies stand up, we will stand down.
Oh, yeah, that's so incredible. All right, that's the Marshall Plan. The other thing, there was some confusion on part of a caller, and I don't know whether that was, I don't know what to say about it, except that the history of Afghanistan is important to understanding what's going on there right now. The fact of the matter is the United States, particularly through the CIA, but in other ways as well, created the enormous resistance to the Soviets' occupation of Afghanistan, which happened after a Soviet-style government was installed, that is, a non-religious government was installed in Afghanistan. There was a huge war that went on and on and on, and essentially bled the Soviets in much the same way that Vietnam and now apparently Iraq have bled or would lead the United States. But in that process, we created the Islamic fundamentalist movements that not created them to be Islamic and fundamentalist, but created the support for the groups that turned out to be Islamic fundamentalists that came to dominate the politics in the form of the Taliban in Afghanistan and are now the people who we are waging a war on terror against. So once again, just as in the case of Iran, where we kicked out a legitimately elected government because it didn't serve our oil interests, the government of Mossadegh in 1953, once again, we have blowback on the most severe terms.
The law of unintended consequences.
Yeah, always applies, and the United States in this time, in this history, seems to be unable to explain that to itself and understand the implications of it. We're going on with the same kinds of policies, but what's really disturbing to me is so many Americans have no sense of how we got into this jam. It's not an abstraction. The terrorists do not hate America. The terrorists are bunches of people who are very angry about a bunch of different issues, all of which coming out of largely out of American adventuristic foreign policy, and nobody's willing to talk about that.
No. It's important, though, that we talk about what we did for the Mujahideen in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
We armed them.
Yes.
We taught them how to organize themselves into a highly mobile, cell-based resistance.
Yes.
One that was very difficult for the Red Army to pin down.
Right.
We established supply chains and money chains to keep their operation going.
Right.
And we largely turned a blind eye to the heroin trade that they were carrying out to also finance their efforts.
Yep. All that.
Yeah, all those things.
So, and now, of course, that organization, it turns out, didn't just have the goal of getting rid of the Soviets, it had the goal of getting rid of all Western influence in the region.
And there was a guy from Saudi Arabia.
A guy.
Who fought on the side of the Mujahideen.
Now, who would that have been?
Yeah, he went through the training program.
Yeah.
His name was Osama bin Laden.
The rich Osama bin Laden?
Mm-hmm, that's him.
Whose family are allies of the Bush administration?
Right.
Those
same,
guys?
Same guy.
Oh, I'm so surprised.
Yeah.
So I did want to review that. I'm not going to spend a long time on the depleted uranium issue, except to say that in Kosovo, in the first Gulf War, in this Gulf War, we are using depleted uranium shells. We've talked about this about a year ago, which essentially are, they're still radioactive. They're just low-level radiation. Uranium is very hard. It's very penetrating. It's very heavy. And it has the capability of bursting into a kind of a fire when it's hot enough and spewing radioactive particles everywhere. Tiny, really tiny particles, the kind that go into your lungs and can't be, you know, it's not like dust. It's smaller than that.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a weapon which has enormous long-term implications for every farmer, for everybody who is exposed to it. And we use these weapons regularly. I first encountered them 15 years ago when I was doing commercial radio and was on the battleship New Jersey.
What are you fighting with? Hamas?
When I joined the Navy and I was on the battleship New Jersey, and we... I discovered that the last weapon to stop incoming missiles or airplanes on the battleship was this Gatling gun that fired incredibly fast, so hot that they had these sabots, these shoe-like devices, these pieces of wood around each shell, because those would burn off as they were shot away. And these things were depleted uranium. And that was, as a matter of fact, that event, the Greenpeace had protested the arrival of the New Jersey at the Rose Festival because they wanted to know and they wanted them to acknowledge that there were nuclear weapons on the ship, and the Navy wouldn't speak to that. And, of course, the ones I knew about were these depleted uranium weapons. These depleted uranium weapons are killing Americans, but in the long term they're going to kill the people of Afghanistan, the people of Iraq. And, of course, when we go to war with Iran, they're going to kill those people. And we have left a bunch of them in Europe as well.
And it needs to be mentioned also that they were used in the first Gulf conflict.
Yeah.
And many people believe have a role to play in the so-called Gulf War syndrome.
Oh, no question about it.
So many returned soldiers.
Yeah, no question about it. So,
and it also, as I understand, they're on somebody's list of banned weapons. I don't know if it's the UN.
Well, we don't care.
Yeah, they're very, very much frowned upon by so-called civilized warriors.
We don't care. We'll kill anybody anytime. Now, yep. I want to put to rest the rumor that al-Zarqawi was jumped on and killed by being stomped to death.
All right, you know, you kind of launch into stuff without setting it up.
I do that all the time.
Tell everybody who al-Zarqawi was.
I'm not going to tell anyone who al-Zarqawi was. He was the head of al-Qaeda in Iraq.
Okay.
And he was he and a bunch of children and, you know, all these people met in a little safe house. And they got bombed by two, some people say three, 500-pound bombs.
So he's dead. They're dead.
They're dead. But there's this rumor in Iraq, which I don't believe, because the government says not so, that after he was dead, they took him in an ambulance, and then when they brought him to wherever they brought him to, a bunch of American soldiers jumped on him and jumped on him, like, with their shoes.
Beat his corpse?
Well, it wasn't the corpse then, see?
That's but you just thing. Said after he was dead.
Well, I shouldn't have said that.
Okay, good.
After he was maybe dead.
Okay.
But it's not true.
After he was in captivity.
Yes. And but I know it's not true for two reasons. Number one, he's too good an asset to allow people to kill. If he was alive, they would want to be talking with him. You know what I'm saying?
But he was killed.
Well, he was killed in the bombing. See, they say that it was really...
But you just said he's too good of an asset to be killed.
But he was not. He was alive at the time that they took him away. And then he wasn't alive at the hospital.
Okay.
That's the problem.
Okay.
And then these people said, hey, we saw this. You know, we saw this jumping on him. But I'm saying it wasn't so.
And you're saying it wasn't so. Why?
Because he's too good an asset to be jumped on.
So, in your mind, it's outside the realm of possibility that American soldiers would
be so stupid?
Brutally kick an Iraqi captive?
No.
Okay.
No, that's not outside the possibility. Not after what
I guess he's not Iraqi. I think he's Saudi, isn't he?
He's al-Zarqawi. He's dead.
Yeah, he's dead.
He's just a corpse, man. Anyway, the thing is that this is the kind of rumor that is believable, and this is where I was really going with this, in this climate where they lie to us so much, we can believe almost anything that is said that fits the pattern of the horror of what we, that is the United States, is doing.
Yeah, it's all too easy to believe this happened.
Yeah.
Because so much other crap has happened.
But I don't believe it.
Oh, okay, that's fine. Now,
well, maybe I... No, I don't.
I thought the president's reaction, or lack of reaction, was fairly noteworthy.
Well, they've gotten kind of they're toning it down now. They're trying to move away from Iraq. I mean, they're going to try to walk away from it if they possibly can figure out a way.
He didn't appear on an aircraft carrier or any other vessel for that matter.
Yeah,
and he didn't wave a codpiece around.
A what?
Codpiece.
Oh, okay. No, I guess he didn't. He, in fact, you know, I think that they would like to kind of whistle, like, you know, after you rob the bank, you don't go shooting and run away. You kind of whoo do do do. Oh, look over there now. Kind of.
Well, even a year ago, they would have been trumpeting this from the rooftops and claiming it as a major victory.
Well, did you know, a
corner has been turned in the war on terror.
Yeah, right. Well, but
the terrorists shall not prevail.
Yeah, right. War on terror is a bizarre concept. Anyway,
freedom is on the march.
Listen, I think it's very sad, and I think what's really, and I really want to address this a little bit today. What's really sad is that we pontificate or explain or argue or present evidence to support what is now characterized as the liberal or left position on this war and other things. We have a staunch audience. We probably have a part of the population, maybe 30% of the U.S. voting population, maybe more, that absolutely agree with us. The listenership of KBOO, most of it being that, okay? And then the other side, the Christian fundamentalist crazies and Republican stalwarts.
Proto-Nazis?
well, whatever, are 30% of the population easily, and they are there. The vast majority of Americans, however, don't seem to care. They are not engaged in the political process. They're not engaged in the concerns that you and I and many others have, either on the right or the left. They, in fact, see correctly that the political process is so corrupted in this society, which is going to bring us to the Rolling Stone piece by Joseph Kennedy, so corrupted that it
was Robert Kennedy Jr.
Well, one of those Kennedys.
Okay.
They're all alcoholics and stuff. Anyway, you know, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. That essentially they believe that the system is so bad and so undemocratic that they don't feel like they need to participate except on the most minimal basis, kind of like people in America care about soccer. And what that does is essentially serve the interests of the ruling class by taking a huge number of people out of the game.
That's true.
And that's what's going on in America today.
Well, it's changing, though. Voter turnout's been up in the past two elections.
Well,
and
yeah.
I think as more and more people realize they lost their job at the plant and now they got to work at Taco Bell.
Did you?
That may move more numbers to the polls.
Did you see that the United Auto Workers, instead of calling for a national health insurance plan, which is the moment is here for that, instead of calling for that, are now talking about how the union labor has to back down and give up its health insurance?
You're kidding.
No. I'm not kidding. That was in the New York Times. That was very bad. Okay, so we got a lot of stuff to talk about. You wanted to do something more with this stealing of the 2004 election piece in Rolling Stone.
Well, yeah, I think it bears some mention.
Well, I actually bought the magazine. I immediately regretted it because it had all the man's perfume ads in it.
You don't wear man's perfume?
No, I don't. I just
prefer to... You wear the woman's perfume?
Well, actually, I just stink. You know? I wash occasionally, and other than that, I just stink. And I think that that the 2004 stolen election piece in the Rolling Stone is very good, but the perfume ads made my whole household unhappy.
Huh.
I mean, have you smelled men lately? What is that? They put all this stuff on. They smell stronger, longer, and badder than ladies.
Yeah, I don't know what that's about.
That's really creepy, man. You shake hands with some dude, and then your hand stinks for the rest of your life. It's really horrible. Anyway, all right, Robert Kennedy Jr., countless graphics and arguments and really good stuff that absolutely proves by any statistical measure and by actual anecdotes and other forms of information that the election was stolen in 2004.
And not just in Ohio.
Not just in Ohio, in Nevada, in New Mexico, of course, in Florida. Does that even need to be said?
And this is what Greg Palast was talking about last week. If you happen to catch his appearance, and we talked about it on this on this program also. So
yeah, but this is an important piece because it's in this magazine, which reaches out to people who I think generally have not a great deal of interest in politics, but also because it's so careful, the rigging of the recounts, every aspect of the manipulation in the rural areas, all of these things.
Illegal challenges of voters.
Yeah.
Removal of voters from the rolls.
Yeah, knocking out mainly minority voters.
Yeah, even a reduction in the number of precincts in Ohio, and then these new precincts suddenly didn't appear on election day.
Yeah, and when precincts in the previous local elections had good voting machines, suddenly there's not enough voting machines.
Yeah, and suddenly there's plenty of voting machines in majority white districts, but not in...
Odd. Very odd.
Majority not white districts.
And, you know, the whole thing, the cops visiting people's houses in Florida. I mean, all kinds of stuff that tell us that the elections in 2000 and 2004 were rigged.
Yeah.
So now Rove is free to do it again in 2006.
Yep.
In the congressional election.
Yeah, and you can see the wave of bamboozlement has begun again. You know, there's a talk about it was defeated in Congress, but a gay marriage amendment. Bill Frist is waving flags that he claims are burning left and right, but nobody's really able to come up with any evidence of one burning for quite some time.
Oh, well, I mean, you know. But they pay no attention to the little man behind the curtain.
No.
No, they're doing this. They anything, any weapon of mass distraction that they can throw out endlessly.
Endlessly.
So what do we do about that?
We take calls.
We take calls?
231-8187 is the number to call.
Hey, BT.
Morning, BT.
How you doing?
Hey, glad to hear from you, man. The most rational voice on the right ever.
On the what?
Never mind.
No, that was wrong.
Go ahead, man.
Yes, I remember your trip on the New Jersey very well. You rode it from Astoria.
Yeah.
To the waterfront, and then you jumped in the KGW van.
How can you remember?
And then you rushed right to the station to do your show.
How do you remember stuff like that?
You know, it's almost like it was 12 years ago, Joe.
Well, I'm pleased that somebody other than me remembers.
Yeah, it's because I told you years ago. I still have all of these calls I made to your show recorded on tape, and I listen to them once in a while.
Why?
I don't know. Because I show people how I win arguments against you.
Oh, that was it.
Something like that. Anyway.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, you guys are spewing, if I use that word, spewing untruths again.
Untruths.
You know, Bin Laden was his side of his front. Actually, I don't know if it's his front. He wasn't really much of a leader.
No.
In that he was a low level guy, but the half of the front he was in was basically bankrolled by the Saudis and maybe some other Arab countries. The U.S. was mainly involved with, what became the Northern Alliance people.
Ah.
So, this thing about we created Bin Laden is garbage.
Well, we created, but the CIA...
As for the Taliban were created by the Pakistani military or some faction in the military because, think of where Pakistan is. They were in between a very unstable Afghanistan, and then they had India on the other side, and they wanted to have a stable, at least one of them to be stable. So the Taliban was put in, and then they didn't have to worry about what was behind them to the west, so they could only worry about India.
So
a lot of people forget about
well,
that.
Well, I understand the approximate relationships you're talking about, and I don't disagree with you, but you are not arguing, are you, that the CIA did not have a hand in all of this?
Oh, no, I'm not saying that at all.
Oh, okay. Just checking.
I just don't know what the extent is, and I don't know if they had anything to do with the Taliban. I know that they tried to sell some Stinger missiles once in a while to that southern front there because they were the only people that had them. But I do remember reading something about a CIA, I guess he was the guy taking orders for the Stinger missiles, and someone pointed out to him, there's a tall Arab over there. Don't go near him. He hates Americans. So it's not that he came running over and said, hey, Osama, hey, we got some more Stinger missiles coming for you. He just didn't want the CIA guys around. He didn't like them even then. But he would take their missiles so long as it was a middleman.
But you do understand the blowback argument. You're not disputing that fundamentally.
I don't know. I mean, it's like saying that these guys couldn't figure out this kind of
stuff
warfare that they're doing, as if they wouldn't have been able to figure it out if it wasn't for the CIA to show them. That's kind
no,
of
no, that's not the argument.
Yeah, that's a moot point, too. They did figure it out, and the CIA was involved. So, ergo, there's blowback.
Well, I don't know. I just think that this whole blowback thing is overrated, but it is true that, you do come across some unsavory people sometimes, and in many cases, I think most cases, they ought to know ahead of time that, hey, these people are just not worth dealing with.
Well, let's go to the fundamental question, for example, of Iran. Now, you will acknowledge that the CIA, working with the British, particularly British, what later became British Petroleum, Anglo-American Oil at that time, did organize the coup against the legitimately elected government of Iran in the mid-50s, right?
Yeah, that's what I've read.
Okay, well, you've read it, I've read it, we weren't there, let's just assume that what we've read, with no contradictions from anybody, is possibly true, okay? That ushered in the era of the Shah, right?
The second era of the Shah.
Yeah, the return of the Shah and the peacock throne and all that stuff. And those guys, they created their own terror apparatus.
They did.
That's really true.
Well, yeah, I know that, they did it. He was, I doubt that he was anything like a Saddam Hussein. But here's the thing, and now that you brought the Shah up, I mean, I hear people, a lot of KABU people saying, oh, Saddam, he was a good buffer there. He was fighting. He wasn't going to let his country be taken over by these fundamentalists. Well, wasn't that what the Shah was? I mean, he wasn't going to let these nuts take over.
I thought the Shah was a great buffer.
The nuts didn't work.
Willing to slaughter a lot. In the end, he just decided to just boogie instead of, he could have stayed and killed more people. And then, what's his name, Ramsey Clark would have defended him, saying, well, he had a right to kill a lot of people. That's what he said about Saddam Hussein.
Okay, now let's see.
Yeah, we're just going all over now.
Yeah, we are. But the thing is that what I was trying to get you to acknowledge was that there is the phenomenon of blowback. And I think you're acknowledging it, even as you throw out all this stuff.
Yes, I can acknowledge blowback. However, I have absolutely no respect for people who will say, "Oh, this is blowback for the for the Crusades. I mean, come on, that was 1100.
Well, okay.
And besides, those Crusades were followed the Islamic Crusades in Europe.
Yes, by several hundred years, but
I'm going to put a portrait of Charlemagne on my wall because he's the guy that, or Charles Martel, isn't he the guy that kicked him out of France? Yeah, there's my new hero.
Yeah, okay.
Put Ferdinand and Isabel up there too.
Are you an infidel, Joe?
Infidel?
Are you a proud infidel? See, I'm a proud infidel.
A proud infidel. Yeah. I don't know.
I'm a proud infidel.
Well, we're all proud infidels here. Hey, listen, it's really good to talk to you, man, but I think we'll give others the opportunity.
All the calls from now on are going to be all the same. You know that. Different from me, but all the same.
You're such a cynic.
Yeah, well, it's just a cable circle jerk, you know. They all say the same thing.
Actually,
well,
one of the interesting things is that this show, and I can't speak to others, does have a lot of people with variety of opinion. Yeah. Yourself being one of them.
Yeah. Well, by the way, Joe, I did not record this call.
You did not record this call.
I'm getting lazy.
Well, I can't help that. I mean, that's age.
I don't need to anymore. I'm just winning so often.
Is that your position? Okay, man. Good to hear from you.
You're right. We do get a variety of opinion.
Wait, should I be more harsh and not let anyone win or something?
See, there's those people who call who think the administration orchestrated September 11th, and then you have people who call and think they simply enabled it. So we do have a wide range of opinion.
All right, 231-8187. This is KBOO. That is Abe. I am Joe. We do want to hear from you. And we got Robert. Robert, you're on the air.
Whoa.
Hi.
I'd just like to make an announcement that the award-winning documentary Independent Intervention will be put on this Saturday, June 17th at 7 p.m. at the Peace House.
Okay.
Which is at 2116 Northeast 18th. That's near the Lloyd Center. That's 18th in Tillamook. And this is a film about U.S. Media coverage of the war in Iraq, focusing on the human costs of war. It contrasts the mass media's coverage of the war, of the invasion of Iraq, with independent reports of the brutal realities on the ground.
Sounds good. Well, sounds good. Sounds serious. Sounds worth attending.
It is. It's very good. I've seen it, and there are numerous shots of demonstrations in Portland.
Really?
The director is from Portland, so that probably explains that.
Little Beirut.
Yeah, Little Beirut. You got it.
Okay, man. Thank you for the announcement.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. As a matter of fact, speaking of announcements, I want to tell people that the Code Pink founder, Medea Benjamin, is coming to Portland, and it'll be Friday. This is June 16th. Friday, June 16th. And in fact, we have a giveaway. We don't do this usually.
No, we don't.
We have a giveaway. One pair of tickets, I don't know how this works. I have never done a giveaway on this station. How do you do this?
I don't know.
Well, you ask for the tickets, I guess, and then our guy on the phones will take your name and address and stuff off air.
How about we give the tickets to the person who offers us the most money?
No, let's give the tickets to the third next caller.
How about the biggest soccer fan?
How about the third next caller?
Okay, tickets available right now.
Third caller.
231-8187 on your KBOO morning show.
231-8187. All right.
All right.
Okay. We'll take our next caller, who is. Now everyone's going to hang up and wait to be the third caller. Yeah, who we got?
Hello?
Hello,
hey, good morning.
Joe.
Hi.
How are you?
Hey, Joe.
But I'd like to say that I think there was an ulterior motive for the Marshall Plan.
And what's that?
That Western Europe, Germany, France, and Italy, were on the verge of democratically going socialist.
That was true. You're right.
And the reason for this was that all of the moderate political parties in those countries had allied themselves with the Nazis and fascists and completely discredited themselves in the process.
Mm-hmm.
And what the Marshall Plan did was it was part of the U.S.'s plan to put money into the centrist and right-wing political and economic elites so that they could reestablish themselves with any participants in the political process.
Mm-hmm. No, I think there's a great deal of truth to that. It was a plan which, in the end, allowed for the creation of a very successful capitalism with something we've never had, with a social democratic set of services and a tax structure that supported those right up through now. And at the same time, not only did it allow the reestablishment of the old order of capital and of parties, as you suggest, but it also, of course, defeated the possibility of an internal socialist revolution and support, therefore, for the Soviets.
You're
right.
But that was also the establishment of the Third World, which probably kept Stalin in power longer than he otherwise would have been, and it gave support for him inside of the Soviet Union.
Yeah.
The Third World was an American creation to serve the same interests as the current war on terrorism is. It was an American fabrication to get the citizens of this country to support the empire.
But it must be said that the nations of Western Europe have not gone to war with each other since. And a Marshall Plan, I think, is an undeniable factor in that.
I'm fading out.
Are you?
Okay, listen, give us a call again soon, will you? I guess we lost Joe.
I guess we did.
His phone.
Yeah.
231-8187. It's
right,
KBOO.
Let's go to Bob.
Hi, Bob. No, Bob.
Bob was caller number two.
Yeah. Oh, but no, he doesn't count. Does he count?
No, he does count.
He counts.
See, now nobody's calling. They don't want the tickets.
Oh, they don't want the tickets.
Well, I'll just have to take them myself.
No, I guess so. No, you can't. You're an employee. You signed a contract.
No, I'm not an employee.
Did we ever sign a contract?
No.
I've never signed a contract.
I signed something.
Oh, you don't know what you signed, do you?
Yeah.
No, this finger goes.
It wasn't a contract, or I'd be getting paid.
Oh, no. Contracts don't necessarily mean you're getting paid. You just mean you're going to play by the rules.
Yeah.
Okay. We are talking about a number of important issues. We're talking about the Marshall Plan, of all things. We're talking about Afghanistan. We're talking about blowback. We're talking about the facts, which are now well substantiated in this article by Robert Kennedy Jr. in Rolling Stone, most recent issue of Rolling Stone.
Yep.
Rolling Stone, man.
Yeah, who knew?
Bad perfume ads. Excellent, excellent article. There's also a great article about sex at Duke. Boy, is that a dumb article. Bob is back. Hi, Bob.
Good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a quick something come up with on Zarqawi.
Okay.
The question I have is who they killed and whether Zarqawi existed, which there is some...
Whoa! The ultimate conspiracy theory around Zarqawi!
Not exactly.
Maybe, not exactly.
I don't know.
Obviously, the documents are out from the Pentagon indicating that it's a very successful program, blaming certain things on Zarqawi.
Right.
But it's an odd thing that since you have a body and you have living parents and brother, that you would do a DNA test and see whether you had Zarqawi.
Well, it was kind of smushed.
No, not that smushed. Actually, let me give you an example.
Okay.
I have horses, and we're currently going to be having some foals.
Well, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. And I will, of course, have these registered with the registry for the horses.
Right.
In order to do that, I take a few hairs, which are the best thing to have, the hair root.
Okay.
And I have to send them to UC Davis, where they will do a DNA test to see whether it came from
the two horses you're claiming it came from.
That's exactly right. And if they do not match, then it can't be registered. It's a very simple procedure. I'll pay for it. Let's just see who he was.
So you're suggesting? No, I'm not quite following you. Are you suggesting that the guy that they got wasn't Zarqawi, and that perhaps even the Zarqawi that we hear about and who did the tapes and all that and claimed so much credit for so much carnage wasn't really a person either?
Possibly not. Possibly not. At least.
But why? Why would you? Why would you think that? I mean, what would be the purpose of such a scam?
Well, the purpose, of course, is. To prove that it's not the Iraqis who are being butchered by the U.S. occupation reaction against that, but it's actually external forces, things like Al Qaeda, things like the Iranians, etc., etc.
Well, but
in other words, it served us very well to have a boogeyman that was not you know, Iraqi that was causing all our problems.
That's going to be disproved really fast as soon as people realize the what they're calling the insurgency isn't even going to slow down. What the piece
exactly.
of this all that's Al-Qaeda is a very, very small one.
And loud and small.
Loud and small. But as I understand it, most of the people committing violent acts in Iraq are either American soldiers or Iraqis themselves.
Yeah, just I'll take that offline, but
sure.
it's a simple test,
well,
and it would be interesting if it's not.
But how do we?
Not Zarqawi. Who is it?
But you know, going by your logic, would you even trust a test done by the United States government?
Of course not.
Okay, man. Thanks for the call. See, this is the thing. Once you realize the system is discreditable, where do you draw the line on the fantastic? Everything's possible now, and the fantastic doesn't exist anymore.
That's just splitting hairs. Is it Zarqawi?
Splitting hairs. That's what he wants to do.
Right.
Is
it Zarqawi? Is it not Zarqawi? The answer, obviously, is to extricate ourselves from this.
I started this by saying nobody jumped on his chest.
Right. So, but you know, we can lay that all to rest by getting the hell out of there as soon as we can.
That would make sense. The Bush administration is going to walk away whistling if they can.
Well, no, he's already said he's going to pass the buck to the next president.
Yeah, right. 2007 would be the year we'd start to withdraw.
Right. Assuming certain conditions are met that will never be met.
Did you see the grave faces on those people at that meeting at Camp David?
No, I did not.
And by the way, it is not true, this rumor that was on Air America that Randy Rhodes put out. It is not true that George Bush had an intimate relationship with Condi Rice.
Oh, yeah?
No, it's not true.
Oh, it was more anonymous?
I want to know. I want to lay it to rest, as it were. And I think it's just terrible of Randy to have said that. It's casual defamation.
Huh.
Any defamation that takes place should be deliberate and well thought out, my position.
What about when Condi Rice referred to George Bush as her husband and then had to correct herself in her next breath?
Slip of the tongue. They pray together, and you know how that is. It's kind of an intimacy of its own kind. So listen, I just wanted to lay that to rest. But I think that people are not willing to look at the complexity of stuff that goes on in Iraq. Iran is there is no such thing as Iran. In Iran, there are many forces that are...
There's a nation-state called Iran.
There is a nation-state, but
okay.
There's also all this other stuff. But the thing is that there are a lot of people whose politics, religious and otherwise, involve efforts to capture the attention and the support of large parts of the Shia population of Iraq. And that's been true for a long, long time. In fact... as we all know, Saddam Hussein and the previous Iranian bunch had a senseless, horrible, vicious, awful, chemical warfare-based and other ways of nasty war, mm-hmm. where the young were slaughtered needlessly and senselessly for a long, long time. So there's that going on. Then,
In fact, the head Shia cleric in Iraq is himself an Iranian.
That's true. And these borders, and this is another fact in all of this, the borders of the state of Iraq are an artificial creation of the settlements of the French and the English, particularly the English, over the issues of oil and other resources to create that state after World War I.
Yeah.
So it's all, it's all creations of the Western powers.
Greg Palast told a good story about this at his presentation.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, he talked about when the revolution that eventually put Saddam Hussein in power took place, and the oil assets of Iraq were nationalized. The British government and representatives of what is now British Petroleum came to John Kennedy and asked him for help. And Kennedy said, "Well, you've been robbing the people of Iraq for years. This is simply justice."
It's probably one of the few good things Kennedy ever did.
Oh, there are a few.
Not many. It was not. I mean, if he hadn't been killed, he would have been a big disappointment.
Well, yeah, he did launch the drive to land on the moon, which, while frivolous, was really cool.
You don't believe they really landed on the moon, do you?
Yeah, I think they
did. It's a fake. It's Hollywood set. Come on, man.
And he was on the way to getting us out of Vietnam.
Oh, Mike. Mike is the winner.
But he did try to invade Cuba, which was dumb.
Yeah. Mike.
You win the tickets.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so after you talk with us, our able-bodied individual behind the... we'll give you the stuff to pick up the tickets.
You already have the tickets. You don't have to impress us now. You got them. They're yours.
Media Benjamin coming to Portland. I just want to promote it again. 7 p.m. Friday, June 16th at St. Francis of Assisi Catholic Church at 330 Southeast 11th.
So what's on your mind, Mike?
Well, I think that I think the global political scene is a hard one to kind of grab a hold of, and it's a harder one to change. And also at St. Francis, we've been kind of starting to put together this Portland Peak Oil.
Peak Oil,
which is very, you know, on the ground, and it's very down to earth. And
I would say under the ground to a great extent.
And so, I really believe that's actually probably the most radical thing that we can do as citizens is actually to decentralize as much as possible, to minimize our kind of our resource use, and you know, especially away from oil and gas, and then just kind of get together with the people around here, and actually let you know, I mean, it's a sad thing, and you know, and I feel a lot for the Iraqi people, and mm-hmm. you know, and oppression anywhere is a sad thing, but. You know, you almost got to. I don't think we're going to stop it. I mean, I don't think we're going to. You know, there's too much. I went to Michael Clare, who talked about resource wars, and he says people will continue to fight over things like gas and oil, but he says the access to clean water is actually going to be the great population equalizer. And so I think we're moving into those time periods where these things are going to become much more of a reality, and the more that we can have our communities here together, the more we can basically kind of subvert the you know, the changes as much as possible to a local sense. And I really actually, you know, I used to be in Earth First and trying to save the environment.
Mm-hmm.
I see right now with the economic situations, the forests are going to get hammered, the Clean Air Water Air Act, all these things are going to get hammered, the mm-hmm. salmon are going to get hammered, because people aren't going to see past survival. So we're already seeing that kind of a world starting to occur. So we need to kind of step forward and design for the decline.
Actually, I agree with you a lot. I think that the notion of Cascadia, that is the watershed being the basis for the economic and regional both politics and organization, makes a lot of sense. I also think that the question of resources, particularly water, will become more and more over the next, I don't know how long it'll be, 50, 100, 200 years, will be more, maybe 20, will be more and more significant. I don't know whether there is, you know, there is an enormous amount of hard to get at oil in Venezuela. There's also an enormous amount of sand soaked oil, oil soaked sand, in Canada and elsewhere. And all of that, as the prices go up, will become mined. The problem that is larger, and I think what you're alluding to, is that the actual dependence on these fossil fuels itself will bring about environmental degradation on an enormous scale and will lead to horrible conditions for most people in the world. So I think, yeah, I think that if we're going to take a serious, which means actually utopian, view of things, we need to develop alternative energy sources, the sun being the freest and easiest, wind power, water power from the ocean tides and so on. All that needs to happen. We had the chance. We actually had the opening to do it, but the energy industry prevailed. And the consequence is that what should have happened beginning in the 70s, and if Carter had stayed in power, might have happened, has not happened. And now we're in the mess we're in. So I agree with you. And I think that while I always like to tease people about peak oil, because who knows what that means sometimes, I agree that the looking toward a regional set of solutions worldwide, demanding that the people in countries get control of the resources, keeping large corporations, for example, from owning the water supplies, all of that is very, very important. So I wish you luck with that.
Okay, cool.
Excellent.
Thanks for the ticket.
You bet.
Cheers.
On this show last summer, while you were off doing God knows what.
I was in where the French are.
Right. Where the French are. Yeah, he came on the show, and we talked about peak oil. Now he says...
You know they talk French there.
Yes, I know that.
Sorry.
He says that we've already passed a point of no return, as it were, and there's not enough existing hydrocarbon energy, meaning there's not enough of the fuel that currently powers the system. There's not enough to drive the transition to an alternate fuel-based economy.
How does he know that?
Well, he's analyzed oil reserves and oil production.
He's just an ex-cop.
Rates and looked at diminishing returns on what's left to be extracted and has come up with this idea that it's already too late, that we don't have enough energy to fuel this transition. So he says we're looking at an inevitable period of loss. There's going to be famine. There is going to be disease. There's going to be rampant unemployment and homelessness. There's going to be some really, really bad times.
So it's an apocalyptic, you know.
Yeah, before we're able to find our footing again.
Well, what good is that?
Well, it's not good. That's the point. It's
so
not good.
It's not a viewpoint that's particularly useful for even attempting to make things better.
Right, and he thinks the whole move towards hybrid cars is a joke. They said there's not enough energy to convert construction of the automobile fleets to make every model hybrid, for example.
Well, hybrids aren't that good.
No, they're not that good because they still depend on petroleum.
Yeah, no, I think that if the best hybrid would, of course, be a biodiesel-powered...
Biodiesel-electric hybrid.
Electric hybrid.
Yeah, but nobody's got one of those
with
yet.
With a plug-in setup, too.
Right. But biofuels, he said, offers maybe a bright spot in this scenario, particularly because, you know, when you burn a biofuel, yes, you are releasing carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, but it's carbon that was until very recently part of a leafy green plant that was coming out of the ground and was itself fixing carbon, taking it out of the air and fixing it in the soil or in its biomass.
See, I think it's still repairable. I think that the odds get worse every year or day, even that humans will rationally understand the dangers they're in and turn toward alternative, not just alternative energy, but alternative usage. I think, you know, for example, everybody in countries like India and China want exactly what Americans have.
Yeah.
And Americans want even more of what they have.
Right.
And nobody's really willing to say, whoa. On the other hand, China has an enormous amount of solar-powered hot water heaters right now that they've developed, and they're using a lot. That there are all kinds of moves all over the world that show that human beings are not done being smart.
No, of course we're not done being smart.
So it's possible that rationality will prevail.
Yeah, but there's also the fact that people will fight harder to preserve a position of privilege than they'll fight for just about anything else.
Isn't that sad?
Yeah, the transnational petro-corporate elite that run the world right now are not going to cede power to the people.
Well, that's true.
There's going to be a struggle.
So you're saying hard times ahead.
Yeah, there's going to be hard times ahead. There may be a period in the not-too-distant future where you can't get tomatoes all year round.
The hard times ahead, I can live with it.
Well, this is just an example. There are many things about our standard of living.
Gee, no tomatoes in the winter. Oh, no.
Many things about our standard of living that we just may, that we take for granted that we're not going to have to deal with. And, you know,
to wear sweaters in the winter? What are you saying?
The expensive transportation of products from far-flung places is one of them.
Well, actually, it is. In fact, the organics movement and all of its allies... I like very much, but the fact of the matter is that what has happened there is that we now have organics from Mexico being driven up using fossil fuels. That's hardly...
In plastic, trucked using fossil fuels.
Yeah, Mexico. I mean, it's hardly a solution to the problem.
Defeats the purpose. Yeah.
So, yeah, I think we should be supporting local endeavors. I think we should start thinking in terms of the natural watershed as the unit of organization. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of stuff that has to happen. Now, will it happen? I don't know. Can it happen? Yeah. And that's my point. It can happen.
Yeah, we might have to do some very unnatural things, like capping the size that a corporation can reach.
Well, I would start by making a corporation no longer a fictitive person.
Well, that's a very good start.
Taking away their First Amendment rights.
And maybe
they don't have a right to lie to us.
Sure. And maybe establishing a maximum ratio between the CEO compensation and worker compensation.
Yeah.
Like CEOs make no more than 10 times... what their average worker makes.
I'm more generous than that. 25 times.
Sure. I mean, the average right now is close, I believe, around 400 times.
Yeah, well, it's America, though. Not Europe so much.
Yeah.
Or else.
But that's changing, as I understand it, too, as there's major mergers across international borders.
Right.
For example, Daimler-Chrysler. Daimler, when it wasn't allied with Chrysler, had a more traditional European compensation setup where executives got rich, yes. But workers were treated very well, and executives didn't get as filthy rich as they do in this country.
Yeah, and Mercedes were really nice cars then, too.
Right, but since the merger with Chrysler, you're seeing CEO and executive salaries at Daimler creeping up and worker salary staying static.
You know what's horrible about this? The horror of this is that all of this really is the stuff that people like to ignore in Marx and his analysis of capitalism. Everything we've just said, apart from the specifics of environment, which he didn't have, but much of it, is really, in its simplest form, in that Communist Manifesto, yeah. 1848.
Yeah.
Commies, man. Yeah. Can you believe it? Isn't that horrible?
Marx's fundamental tenet still holds true, and that is history is a material struggle between those who have stuff and those who want stuff.
Yeah.
And that's really one of the reasons that American capitalism has been so seductive, because we've managed to give a great chunk of the population a fair amount of stuff.
Yeah.
Enough so that they don't, they're not going to rock the boat too much.
Well, and also it turns out that the so-called socialisms that came beginning in 1917 to the Western world and then later to China and so on, failed to take into account a lot of the complexities that are necessary in economic systems, including the creativity of the independent adventurer.
Right.
And the desire for stuff. And I don't know if humans can be turned around on the level that's necessary, but I'm not willing to give up just yet.
Yeah, well, as we've talked about on the show before, it's going to take at some point humans deciding not to act like primates. And that's a very difficult thing for primates.
Shut up, cheetah.
For primates to do.
our producer guy just said, how about the bonobos, which are these very affectionate apes, let's just say. Okay, we're not going to go into that at all. We do want to hear from you. 231-8188. 231-8187, and
Gordon.
It's Gordon. Hi, Gordon.
Good morning.
Hi, how are you this morning?
Fine, thanks.
I want to talk to you about is the man who was kind of anti-blowback. I find one of the problems with the United States, one of our great quote-unquote philosophers was Henry Ford, who said that history is bunk. And, you know, that really runs through this country. So what we tend to do is not learn from what we do either on a positive or a negative basis. And when I've been in some foreign countries, I find less of that kind of attitude. I was in Scotland on the day of the devolution vote. You know, that's when they handed power back down, which really doesn't happen in this country.
Uh-huh.
And I was really surprised just talking to people sitting in the hotel how much better informed the kind of average Joe was than the average Joe that I talked to. And I'm not talking about you, Joe.
No, I thought I was the average Joe.
Well, in some ways you are.
You'll get there someday. Keep at it.
In some ways you're not, because you're far better educated than the average Joe. But, you know, that's part of the problem, is that we don't tend to pay much attention to history, except on very superficial levels. You know, we celebrate the 4th of July, and probably most people really don't know what it's about. Or we celebrate Thanksgiving, but we really don't know that story. And so I think that other cultures tend to remember their history somewhat better. They have a whole tradition, you know, the troubadour, you know, where they told stories in Northwest Coast Indian, you know, there was all this storytelling going on, and they went through the whole history of the family or the tribe.
Well, I think, first of all, I think you're right. But I think the reasons in Europe have to do with the fact that they've been proximate to serious, devastating, horrible nationalist struggles and wars and revolutions, whereas the United States has evolved within the context of a totally absurd cultural myth of God's direction that we take over a supposedly empty continent, which involved the slaughtering of many, 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 many people and the enslavement of many, many, many others. Richard Hofstadter, sort of famous historian, wrote about how there's an incredibly strong strain in America of anti-intellectualism. And this is something that that actually has been talked about before. And this is part of our credo, kind of. We don't want no facts to spoil our myth. And that is really part of the American character. And most Americans seem to themselves, at least, to do very, very well in this context. most people don't have a deep analysis. They don't have a class-based analysis. They're living in a mythic environment in which they believe that this is everything that happens here and everything that is here is the best of all possibles, and that anything that might be looking good somewhere else is about to collapse or won't work. Mm-hmm. So, you know, yeah, so we sustain ourselves, as do many peoples in the world, we're not unique in this, within the context of our own national myth. Our national myth is very compelling, and it has allowed us to do the things that we do that make our lives, superficially at least, seem great. You can watch American Idol, you know, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And the other thing I'd like to mention, another essay that he wrote about the paranoid aspects of American politics.
Oh, yeah, right.
We also always have to have an enemy. And, you know, at one time it was the fringe prior to 1800. Well, you know, right now we have this great enemy. So,
well,
we can all rally around.
It was the Native Americans.
The guy who lives in a cave.
Yeah, it was the Native Americans. It was the Mexicans. It was the Spanish in 1898. I mean, that's all true. And by the way, all of this was even referred to in de Tocqueville's work, right in the 1820s, 30s.
Yeah, yeah.
So listen, I think you're right on. I think, however, that people are educable. I think that part of what makes the struggle interesting is to make the history not only available but understandable and entertaining.
Well, I totally agree with that point of view, because I've always felt that education is the answer to all kinds of things that we need to do. So I'm going to go on and let you talk to the next person, but I just thought I would bring this up.
Sure.
Hey, thanks, Gordon.
Sure.
You know, well, something you said reminded me of that awful period from about 1989 to 1991 when we all of a sudden didn't have an enemy.
God, that was scary,
wasn't
it?
Remember how unsettling that was?
Ooh, no enemy.
Thank God we told Saddam Hussein to go ahead and invade Kuwait.
Yeah, we did do that, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
There's a thing that's been forgotten.
Yeah. But
it's okay, man. Take Kuwait. Oh, but we didn't mean it. April Fool.
And you mentioned the culture of anti-intellectualism in this country.
Yeah.
I'd say it's reached its apex in this president, who has cultivated an anti-intellectual image. And
It's not just an image, man.
Yeah, that's true. Who is an anti-intellectual? And how?
No, man. We spell it S-T-U-P-I-D.
That's right.
Okay.
And how are leftists pilloried on right-wing radio? Well, they're called, ivory tower academic elitists.
Oh.
By people who themselves, based upon their bankrolls, are members of the elite.
Should we get Ann Coulter on the air?
I'd love to get Ann Coulter on the air.
I'm not going to say the thing I almost said about Ann Coulter.
I'm glad you said that. She's really a skinny, horse-faced, ugly woman.
Oh, wow, well, you attack her physical characteristics.
Yeah, she's ugly.
What are you, a chubby chubby red-haired guy? What is this?
That's right. But
come on, man, what is that?
Better be a chubby redhead guy than an ugly, skinny fascist.
That's politically not only incorrect, but wrong.
Ugly.
Wrong.
Coming up
the
this
problem.
Morning on KBOO. Right. At 9 on Between the Covers, host Alice Perry interviews writer and poet Julia Alvarez, who talks about her latest book, Saving the World. Sounds like a rather broad topic.
Okay, go for it, though.
At 9:30, the guests are peace activists Dot Maver and Gary Spanovich, who will discuss the campaign to form a Department of Peace and Nonviolence within the federal government. Good luck with that.
Yeah, right.
The host is Michelle Schroeder Fletcher. At 10, Tammy Dean speaks with journalist Tom Zollner, author of The Heartless Stone, A Journey Through the World of Diamonds, Deceit, and Desire.
Yeah, chop your arm off, not on the right side.
Right. At 10:30 on Stage Studio, hear about C.V. Vanka and Rhythmic Delights and their concert with Portland Tycho and singer and actor Jim Chan's one-man show at the Jasmine Tree Restaurant. At 11 on Democracy Now!
Hey, my favorite show!
The decision not to indict Karl Rove, a look at the investigation of the killing of 9 Palestinians last week and in an Israeli airstrike, and a report on abuse in American prisons.
Oh.
Yep.
Oh.
And also playing all day long on television the World Cup.
Oh, yeah, and I want to remind people that Code Fink founder,
Fink.
Media Benjamin.
Medea.
All right, Medea. I like Media better. Medea Benjamin is spelled the same.
Yeah.
Medea Benjamin comes to Portland 7 p.m. Friday, June 16th at St. Francis of Assisi Catholic Church. Doors open at 6:30. You definitely want to catch that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good thing. And that's actually sponsored by the Alliance.
Yeah.
Who co-sponsored with us the appearance of...
Greg Palast. Yeah.
Greg Palast, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, all that and more, we're talking about... First of all, you are listening to KBOO, 90.7 FM dial. I'm Joe Uris. That's Abe Proctor. And he just said Ann Coulter was ugly, and that was why he didn't like her?
No, I don't like her.
Let me get this straight. I just wanted to get down to this, because, you know, I thought, you know...
No, no.
There might be better reasons than the fact that she's skinny and horse-faced.
I don't like her because...
There might be better reasons.
Because she's a reactionary demagogue whose most latest outrageous statement was saying the 9/11 widows really enjoyed the death of their husbands.
Oh, I thought that was so cool.
Wasn't that cool? This was on the heels of her previous comments, which included a recommendation that we invade every Islamic country and convert their leaders to Christianity.
Now, that was another smart one.
Right.
She's really smart, man. She's going to sell a lot of books with smart talk like that.
Exactly. That's why I don't like her. The fact that she's ugly and horse-faced and skinny is just
extra. How can you go there? That's so reactionary.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, come on. Yeah. You don't care what she looks like?
No.
I wouldn't even care if she was a boy instead of a girl.
See, I think she thinks she's really attractive.
I don't think
If she were to hear me calling her ugly, it would make her really angry. So I do have an ulterior motive.
But she's not listening to us, man.
No, she's not.
She doesn't listen to anybody.
I'm dreaming.
She's absolutely... All she's about is making a whole bunch of money by being outrageously right-wing.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
She's in the Rush Limbaugh School of Intelligence.
Right.
But I don't think she takes drugs like Rush.
She's also gone on record...
If she does, she takes speed.
She's also gone on record...
If she does.
Gone on record as saying liberal women are not attractive, that they don't take the time to make themselves look pretty.
Well, and then, so you're feeling that therefore you can attack her physical attributes or lack thereof.
No, if she's ugly, I'd attack that anyway. Oh. But I think liberal women are attractive.
You think liberal women are attractive?
Oh, yeah.
That's okay,
true.
Well, here comes a liberal woman who's very attractive. And
she is, see?
She's brought us something. She says...
Prove my point.
Oh, wait. We're in trouble now.
Are we?
Yeah. I wish to complain about your on-air remarks regarding horses. On behalf of all horses... With few exceptions, I demand an apology to my own horses in particular. Ann Coulter is far, far uglier than either end of any horse I have ever known.
All right.
I'd
like to make an apology to horses everywhere. I'm sorry that I compared you to Ann Coulter.
We're degenerating into like ordinary radio, man. 231-8187.
We got some calls.
Let's get serious.
Save us, please. Steve, good morning.
Good morning, Joe. Good morning, Abe. You guys are fabulous.
Thank you.
Let me tell you, though, there's no horse on earth that has an Adam's apple like that Ann Coulter woman. Enough said. I won't say any
more. Are you trying to suggest that she's in drag?
Tut, 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 tut. There are those who say she's a boy, but I'll say no more.
Why? Okay. Say no more.
I'll say no more about that.
All right.
I have 2 points, actually three, but very quick.
Okay.
On anti-intellectualism, look in today's paper, and Ethan Hawke, of all people, little rat-faced himself.
Oh, we're really going after people's looks today.
We're going after him big time. I'm sorry.
Well, I'm 6 foot.
What he said.
Wait a minute. I want to get this established. I'm 6'2", tan, but not too tan. And blue eyes, blonde hair. Or blue hair, blonde eyes. I don't know. Anyway, go ahead.
But anyway, Ethan Hawke, regardless of what he looks like, said, and I quote, in today's paper, "The sad reality is, the more you read, the more intelligent you are. It's not rocket science." Wow.
Well, why is that a sad? How is that a sad?
I wonder myself why he calls it a sad reality.
Well, you know, he's kind of cute. He was in some movie in Paris or something that I saw.
Yeah,
really,
yeah.
A really good movie.
In any case, my other points are this.
Yeah.
Corporate personhood. Now, if a corporation had a personality, that would be another story.
Well, they try to create them. They try to create them, you know.
Yeah, and usually they're bad personalities.
You know,
rapacious, greedy.
Indeed.
Yeah.
And finally, as you gentlemen know, my solution to world peace would be, in some ways, speaking of bonobos, to become something like bonobos.
You want us upon greeting each other to immediately embrace in a sexual relationship?
Absolutely.
Wow. That sounds dangerous.
It could be. It could be. Anyway, you guys are doing a great job, and don't let that earlier caller let any of us think for a moment that this is a so-called circle jerk, because it is not. It is not. It is not.
Okay.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Nicole.
All bonobo references aside.
Yeah,
right. Who do we have next?
231-8187 is the number to call.
Mark, good morning.
Hi, Mark. You there?
Bill.
Bill. Hi, Bill. Never mind, Bill. Soon, Bill will be.
We're swinging and missing.
Well, it's the old cable game. let me just cough a bunch.
Go ahead.
Oh, hi. Who we got?
This is Bill.
Hi, Bill.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, guys. Going to change the subject just a little bit.
Okay. Please.
Hey, you're familiar with the Beaverton Jesus brick?
No. Sorry, I'm not.
You haven't heard about the Beaverton Jesus brick.
Is this something we can talk about at this hour of the day?
Yes, you can.
Okay.
Is this something you throw through an atheist window?
For Variety Talk Radio in Portland last week.
Yeah.
I mean, they really, really tried to raise this on the radar.
What is the Beaverton Jesus brick?
Okay. A lot of the libraries in the area do fundraising by selling bricks.
Yeah, yeah, that's the thing.
My kids,
when they were in school, we gave them a brick.
Sure, exactly.
Yeah.
All right. And there are people that are buying bricks with the name Jesus, and, you know.
Jesus? Just Jesus?
Yeah, J-E-S-U-S.
I have several friends with that name, actually.
Well, that's Jesus.
Well, yes. But it's spelled the same.
Right. And the libraries are accepting the donations.
Well, sure.
And putting the bricks in the walkway.
Why not?
All right. Now, here's the problem.
Okay.
Last week, Lars Larson and the folks at KPAM and KXL, you know, they tried to raise this onto the radar when a retired librarian attempted to protest the Jesus brick at the Beaverton Library.
Well...
Now, in fact, she wasn't protesting the Jesus brick. What she wanted to do was put Greek gods in the walkway.
Well, she can buy Greek god names and put them in the walkway, can't she?
But the library board turned her down.
Oh, wow. Now, wait. She has a point.
They turned her down.
Any
See,
god.
So she protested their decision.
I agree.
And
I'm on her side.
And this is when the Jesus brick people... who've been waiting around. They did this on purpose to get a challenge in court for separations issues and for freedom of speech. And this
Nobody would bite on it.
And this is the closest they could get was a retired librarian who protested the board's decision to not allow her brick.
Uh-huh.
And they turned it into she was protesting the Jesus brick.
Oh, I see.
Oh, I got it.
Okay.
Well, listen, here's our official position. I can do this without even consulting Abe. On a brick, as long as it's not obscene, because that's just the rules.
Exactly.
Anybody can put any number. There's a limited number of letters, but any number of letters saying anything if they buy the brick.
Yeah, including Horace. You know.
Horace.
Well, yeah, I think in the interest
We were talking
of,
about horses just the other just a minute ago.
In the interest of raising money, the library ought to take a brick from any deity who wants to purchase one.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Any god in the storm.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Lars Larson is the classic example of you can't be too dumb to win.
Right. And they, you know, this was all a trap meant to try to get the lefties who, you know,
lefties.
As you know, we have this campaign to squash and squelch Christianity and to not allow them to speak freely and to constantly attack them.
And this was a great way to
put this in front of the people across Oregon and prove their point.
No, absolutely. I know. Because I've attended the meetings.
Yeah, I did too. I got the new flyer.
Of the vast conspiracy to end Christmas and force everybody to be atheists.
Yeah.
And it's working.
It's working.
Well, it must be true because we certainly don't behave like Christians.
No.
As a nation or anything.
Nope. Now, I thought it was rather humorous, and the fact that it didn't even raise onto your radar kind of proves that it backfired.
Well, no, just, you know, we miss so many of the major issues of our time.
We do.
Yeah, you know, we worry about war and peace and environment and stuff like that. We miss the important stuff like the Jesus brick.
Well, this is, you know, a local issue.
Will you keep us appraised, you know, if any other deities attempt to buy a brick?
Yes.
Well, actually, these Jesus bricks have appeared across Oregon in a lot of libraries. And
appeared to be like a miracle, or somebody actually buy it?
Isn't it a miracle? Right.
and
amazingly, purchased by the same people.
Jesus is magic.
Yeah.
Don't forget that.
Yeah, I just thought it was amazing that they were trying very hard to pick a fight.
Well, I may buy a Jesus brick.
Yeah.
I mean, what the hell?
Or Yahweh brick?
A Yahweh brick. In the Orthodox tradition of Judaism, you do not
I can't say Yahweh.
We should just get a Kabu brick.
A boo brick. It's like rubric, only smoking it. Okay, man.
Thanks for the call.
Actually, seriously, thanks for that information, because it's something we're definitely going to file under important.
Thank you.
All right. No, this is really going on. This is the stuff they fight about.
Yeah. Yeah, because...
231-8187
is
Talk Radio.
You don't have to fight about the
cable.
War or about
why worry about it?
On the rise.
Yeah, about the rising cost of higher ed for the kids and how the schools can't keep up
right.
And how everything's messed
jobs
up.
And
the environment's collapsing and they're going to sell all the biscuit fire stuff. And all right, so, you know, let's go to William.
Okay, William.
Hi,
William.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Yeah.
You know, the previous caller, a couple calls back, talking about education.
Yeah.
And I have to agree with that, but, you know, you look at the No Child Left Behind. It
yes.
seems that this policy is putting all the emphasis, you know, on, you know, teaching towards the test and really not teaching anything of substance.
Right.
And that it's really dumbing us down.
Yeah, it's true.
It's very bad. It's... If you're going to have a national educational system, which I have mixed feelings about, very difficult in America. France has one, England has one, and so on. But, you know, they have there's more cultural hegemony there. But anyway, if you're going to have that, it should include subject matter and be very clear about not just the skills necessary to get by, reading, writing, and arithmetic, but beyond that, knowledge of history, knowledge of, you know, a bunch of different subject areas, science and so on. Americans are woefully ignorant. We have a huge percentage of our population that believes that the devil is behind things in history and in current events. We have a huge part of the population that doesn't believe in evolution. I mean, we are ignorant, misinformed, misguided people in a culture and society which shouldn't have that. And the educational system has been, I think, hijacked by the crazies for a long, long time.
Yeah, and if you orient your education system so that students will perform well on a standardized test, you're missing out on a lot of things. You're not teaching children how to analyze, how to think critically, how to write in an expository or in a creative fashion. You're essentially, you know, you're teaching them to put the right answer in the right place.
And having a right answer.
Right.
All right.
Anyway, hey, thank you for the call.
All right, 231-8187. This is KBOO, 90.7 FM dial. I'm Joe. That's Abe. Hello.
Can I mention one more thing?
Yes.
Oh, you're there. I didn't know you were there.
Go ahead.
I'm still here.
Okay. Okay.
about the organics.
Yes.
And you know the sort of the hypocrisy of, you know, driving them, you know, miles and miles and miles. Are you familiar with New Seasons Market?
Yeah.
They have several hundred products in their store that are labeled, you know, local, coming from, you know, either, you know, Washington, Seattle, and California. And I just sort of really appreciate that they're trying to put an effort out to, you know, to create a sustainable local economy.
Well, they haven't given us hundreds of dollars, so I have no comment on that.
They have been?
They have not.
They have not.
They have not. Therefore, I have no comment on that.
Yeah, that's the model that we need to be following.
What, you know, they give us money, we comment on it?
Yep. No. Stores that carry organic foods that are produced regionally and transported a minimal distance.
Well, and I like, you know, and I like people's...
That is what they're doing.
Yeah. I like People's Food Store, which I found a very pleasant location over here on 21st.
Yeah.
Over here in Southeast. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of good stores, actually, that are independent and independently owned and that try to emphasize the local and the healthy. Anyway, thank you very much for that call. Whoa. Now he's gone.
Hey, it's LJ. Good morning, LJ.
Well, good morning. How are you?
All right.
Okay, here's the deal. I know we're running out of time, so I'm just going to give you a couple of quick things.
Do it.
Okay. A couple of callers ago, you had some guy about Afghanistan and blah, blah, blah.
blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, and like yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so here I'm taking these. I'm going to throw some numbers at you. And I got this from a book called Overthrow. Have you guys read Overthrow?
No.
Stephen Kinzer, America's Century of Regime Change from Hawaii to Iraq.
Okay.
All right, here's the deal. All right, being the agency couldn't give money directly to the Mujahideen.
Mm-hmm.
They set up an agency in Pakistan called the ISI, the Inner Service Intelligence Agency. Okay. And Joe and Abe, I love to follow the money. So, 1981, $30 million through the ISI to the Mujahideen.
Aha.
Boom. 1984, $200 million from Pakistan, through Pakistan to the Mujahideen. Boom. 1986, $470 million to the ISI, through Pakistan to the Mujahideen. Boom. 1987, $630 million to the Mujahideen.
So we were right, the CIA.
Right. And wait a minute. When it gets better, Joe.
Yes.
The $630 million was matched dollar for dollar by the Saudis.
Ah, the Saudi-USA connection. I love it. Man, thank you for that information.
Nothing to it, Joe.
Yes.
Abe, follow the money.
Absolutely. It's been my slogan for years.
Right. God bless America, Joe. God bless Kate Smith.
Kate Smith, for those of you too young to know, was a very powerful singer of large form, since we're talking about physical things, who sang God Bless America, which was a song written by Irving Berlin, a Jew. Very patriotic dude. Very successful songwriter.
Yep.
Lots and lots of songs.
Yep.
Great guy.
Mm-hmm.
I used to hang out with his... I'm making that up.
Oh, okay.
All right, 231-8187.
You wouldn't hang out with Jews. Ed, good morning.
Ed. Ed, are you there?
I am.
Okay, go. You're
on
the
air. Mind.
How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Good. Hey, talk about peak oil. I got a solution for peak oil.
What's that?
Anwar.
Anwar, you want to drill, and that'll last, what, 6 weeks?
I do want to drill, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
I still remember to this day when we decided to go up to Alaska and construct the Alaskan pipeline.
Who could forget?
And all the environmentalists and all the animal huggers and all the little people who cared about all the buggies said, oh, it's going to kill the caribou, it's going to do this. Well, come to find out 20, 30 years later, the caribou population has tripled because they love hanging out by the pipeline because it's so warm. We created a natural outdoor heater for these animals.
I wouldn't call it natural, but I got two words.
Not natural, but we created
a
radiant heating system.
I got two words to answer that. Two words, just two words. Exxon Valdez.
Yeah.
Okay, we've learned from that, okay?
What have we learned? Did the oil companies get away with murder?
No. Hey, you know what? The earth is residual, and it will recover, okay? So a few duckies, got killed, all right?
Yeah, okay. Okay. All right, wait. I want to go back.
The ocean cleaned itself up. The ocean cleaned itself up.
Okay, I just want to ask you.
Exxon cleaned up the ocean and wrote it off as his taxes the next year.
You know that there are oil spills in the ocean on a daily basis at the bottom of the ocean?
That's technically not an oil spill.
Listen.
Okay, but there's oil being
oil leaks. It leaks. Yes, oil leaks.
Constantly.
But let me ask you this.
Cleans itself up.
Let me ask you this. I guess I won't get to ask
God created for the earth to take care of itself.
Well, aside from the role that
God played.
All right, whatever. Let me just ask you this. How could I forget that? You won't let me. How many days of actual oil for the world exist in the North Slope?
Not for the world, for the United States.
All right, for the United States.
Right, how many days?
Since God only loves us, for the United States.
It's our property. We own it.
Property?
I
thought the
it's a protected area. It's not our property.
What about
it belongs
stewardship?
To the state.
Don't you believe in stewardship?
Okay, yes, I do. And here's another reason why we have a oil problem.
Yes.
The environmentalists have not allowed us to build a single refinery in the United States in the last 20 years.
I think it's the fault of...
The environmentalists are causing us to have 30 different oil mixtures in 40 and 50 different...
Yeah, that is terrible. You know, I think it's the bicyclists, though. I think you're missing the mark here. I think they're the ones who are behind the conspiracy to make sure that we Americans don't have enough stuff. And
well,
I appreciate your call, man. We've run out of time. For me, Joe, and he,
Abe,
we say goodbye. Stay tuned. KBOO, the most amazing radio station ever.